On Tech News Today, the founder of Tumblr wants to bring back the customized profile pages of the early 2000s, but mobile this time. And Google is testing a total overhaul of how bookmarks work and what they can do. And Al Jazeera says Google was cozier with the NSA than they previously disclosed. I don't buy it. All that and more coming up next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, May 6th, 2014. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free two-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TNT. And by RingCentral, the cloud-based phone system we use here at Twit. And it just got better with the launch of Meetings, the full-service video conference feature. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral starts at under $25 a month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial and buy one desk phone, get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Mike Elgin.
And I'm Jason L.
Tech News Today explores the big stories of the day with some of the world's best journalists. Our guest co-anchor today is Alyssa Breznik, technology columnist for Yahoo. Welcome, Alyssa.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we're glad you're here. We are testing a product service thing called the Pixel Core Question Engine. That's actually not going to be its name when it actually exists in the wild. It's currently beta. And Alex Lindsay, who is the CEO and founder of Pixel Core, is letting us try this out on Tech News Today. Now, we've got the URL on the screen if you're watching the video version. And I'm going to read it out, as horrible as this is. I'm going to read out the URL because we want everybody to participate in this trial. It's go.gl/Z6Q(q)R. How awful is that? There has to be a better way to do URLs on audio. Well, so throw your questions in there. They'll rise to the top and you can vote up or vote down any sort of questions. And both I and Alyssa will see that. So let's jump into the news. Tumblr founder David Karp wants to bring back the glory days of the early 2000s when customized personal websites ruled the internet before everybody started using bland and uniform social media profile pages. Today, Tumblr updated its mobile app so users can customize their mobile Tumblr layouts just like they can with the desktop browser version. Ellis Hamburger is a reporter for The Verge, and he's written an extensive story on based on a visit to the Tumblr office and an interview with the founder. Is that correct, Ellis?
Yes, it is.
All right. Well, welcome. And it was a really interesting story. Now, didn't customized profile pages go away for a reason? I mean, remember how ugly MySpace and all these customized pages were?
Yeah, I think they did go away for a reason. And thanks again for having me. I think part of it was that people needed a better way to find their friends, see what their friends were up to, and actually navigate all the stuff that they were posting. And if you remember, like, sites like MySpace, part of the reason they went away, it wasn't just because these profiles were so cluttery. It was also because there was so much spam. There was auto-playing music that people were really annoyed about. There weren't a lot of like restrictions on what you could do. And I think Tumblr does put you inside of a box where you can only do certain kinds of things, but it's a lot bigger, a lot more flexible box than most of the social networks we use today, which David Karp called directories or profiles where everybody looks the same. And Tumblr is not a social network like Facebook or Twitter, but I think some of Karp's ideas about trusting us with our profiles, I think we're ready to start looking at some of those again.
You make an interesting point that Tumblr is not a social network, but nowadays I kind of wonder what a social network really is. I mean, people call Twitter a social network. It's really microblogging. People call Facebook and Google Plus, I guess, are social networks because they're sort of all-encompassing. But they're losing users to smaller, definitely not social networks, you know, messaging applications, you know, Snapchat, WhatsApp, and so on. And so it's really kind of a muddled world in terms of what's a social network and what isn't. Now, of course, the browser-based social networks like, I guess, Twitter and definitely Tumblr, again, whether it's a social network or not, you can customize it. You can change the design. You can use a template even. On Twitter, you can do minimal customization. You can have a different background and sort of add a picture. Facebook lets you put a big banner picture and so on. But on the mobile apps, they don't. All of these apps are pretty locked down in terms of mobile. So what is Tumblr doing for the mobile app that will enable people to customize the look and feel of their mobile profiles?
What they're doing is giving you the ability to change the font of your title from among 33 fonts. You can add or remove a description. You can change your avatar. You can make it a circle or a square. You can change a header. You can do background color. You can also change the accent color, which is really critical, which actually changes the entire look of the app when you're looking at your blog. And that's something I'd really never seen before in the last few years on today's social networking sites, whatever you want to call them, whether they're social networks or microblogs or what have you. I think the important thing is that they're letting you be yourself, but within these limitations that mobile brings. Because I think that's one of the reasons that you don't see as much customization. Like Twitter, for example, on mobile, you can really just change your avatar and your header photo. And I think Tumblr has some really unique new ways to let you not just change your profile, but change the app. So this feels more like you're looking through this frame into somebody's content. You're not just looking through this window Twitter provides into somebody's thoughts or tweets or anything like that.
Now, my understanding is that this app lets you change your mobile look and feel, and that alteration doesn't affect the desktop, and vice versa. If you change the design of the desktop, that doesn't affect the mobile version. Is that correct?
Not entirely. That's an interesting distinction that I thought was a little too much in the weeds to go into in my piece, which was largely about David Karp and the company's overall ideas for identity. But the way it works is that they're laying out these new parameters like your accent color or your avatar or your header image or the color and font of your title. And those things are going to carry over to all of Tumblr's default themes and maybe soon to some of the other themes within the theme market on Tumblr. So I think they call these like globally consistent parameters or something super catchy like that. But essentially what that means is that you're still going to be allowed to do a ton of customization on the web because they absolutely don't want to take that away from their users. That's one of the things that Tumblr provides that's incredibly unique. And people love that. People think it's nostalgic and they do rainbow cursors and they do whatever they want. They show themselves however they want. So mobile definitely presents some more limitations, but there are going to be some things that carry over. But on the web, you can choose whether those things carry over or they just kind of sit in the background and you do your own web design.
Now, you mentioned... Go ahead, Alyssa.
Do you think that this is because it's chic to be 90s internet now? I mean, do you think that's part of the reason that he wanted to add this stuff? I know that a lot of digital art is all about sort of remembering those ridiculous times and, you know, really celebrating the cheesy, ridiculous fonts that we used or the word art that we would include in our middle school reports.
Yeah, I think those types of cultural trends served as a reminder, not just that the internet is like this interesting thing that's been around for a while, but also that there are these cultural themes and trends and memes and sub-memes that we should be paying attention to. So maybe that looking back at the 90s, you know, nostalgic fetish that we might be going through right now, I think that probably served as an inspiration for letting people make changes. But I mean, if you look at a lot of the themes that Tumblr provides, and if you look at a lot of their customizations, I mean, they don't really look back on the 90s. They're really very clean and medium-y and legible. But just the fact that you can customize it, I think, looks back to a time where everybody had their own Angel Fire homepage and nobody looked alike.
Now, Alice Hamburger, you mentioned that you talked to Tumblr about their plans for identity. What are they thinking in that space? I mean, obviously, there's a huge gaping hole in the industry for providing solid identity online, which could be used for all kinds of things, including e-commerce. What are their plans there?
We didn't talk as much about specific plans as we did about the idea that there is a place for identity. Why are we trained to assume that all of our profiles, like on Facebook and Instagram, that they should all look the same? And I think it all goes back to this very much like content is king idea, this paradigm that we all are living in today, especially Silicon Valley, Karp said. But he would really encourage us to think about how can we, you know, we have the most incredible canvas in the world in the internet and in the tools that we have, which are of increasing complexity. So why are our profiles so dead simple and so impersonal aside from the content we put on them. And of course, you gain things by having those kinds of profiles. Anybody can read them. Anybody can use them. And they're very accessible, where if you look at some Tumblr blogs, they're impossible to navigate. But I think there's a lot of character in that. And I think that that's something worth revisiting as we look at profiles on not just Tumblr, but on any social network where we want to represent ourselves. Even something like about.me seems to understand that with this, you know, even just a few levels of customization, people really love that. And one of the stats Tumblr gave me was that 80% of their active users have customized their blog. So I think that really shows that there is a desire, you know, for people, but also just for Tumblr users, people want to customize and they want to put themselves out in the world in a way that looks different from anybody else.
Now, Ellis Hamburger, we have a question from the Pixel Core question engine from Randolph Carr from Savannah, Georgia. He says that he asks if Tumblr makes any money and is it going to survive? And now, this is obviously a Yahoo property, but what are the is this a profitable venture for Yahoo yet?
You know, we really don't know. I think in their last several earnings reports since buying Tumblr, I think a year or so ago, they haven't really mentioned Tumblr aside from, here's our Yahoo blog on Tumblr. And I think that's an indication that there really isn't any significant profit or revenue there yet. He brings up a good point. In a site where it's impossible sometimes to tell one demographic from another, and you can't pin down these users, you can't pin down their buying intents, you can't pin down what they're searching for, and then if they buy it and if they click on these ads, especially since they haven't rolled out very many ads yet, it potentially poses a problem for them. And maybe it just won't be as profitable as other sites, or maybe they'll come up with some really native way to do it where they're making a lot of money. But I think the identity thing, the problem for advertisers is that people are creating all these identities, but that doesn't mean that they're their real identities. So I think that presents a potential problem.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. And also, it's hard to quantify the money made when they're using Tumblr, and presumably they are using Tumblr, for harvesting user data for advertising that appears outside of Tumblr. So that could be part of a contribution to Yahoo's overall financial picture that doesn't necessarily involve being profitable on ads posted on Tumblr. Well, Ellis Hamburger, I want to thank you for coming on Tech News Today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Always great to have you on. Of course, Ellis Hamburger can be found at TheVerge.com. Make sure you get the word "the" in there. And also on Twitter at Hamburger.
Thanks.
He got that one. McDonald's won it, but he got there first. You got to be fast in this business. Well, in a sec, we're going to tell you about something new in the news arena for a mobile app. But first, I want to tell you about Squarespace. Squarespace is the best place for you to build a website on the internet. And the reason is that all the aspects of building a website, from the design, from the functionality, the performance, the stability, all of it is top-notch on Squarespace. It's the best in the industry. I've been using Squarespace for probably at least two and a half years, and I absolutely love the experience of using Squarespace because it's so easy to do. If you want to build a new website, you simply go in and choose from among 25 beautiful templates, and then you can customize them to your heart's content so that your website is completely unique. If you have a small business or you want to sell something on the internet, they have a logo creator tool so you can create a logo for your business. Super easy to do, and you don't have to have any experience as a designer or an artist. Very, very simple. And you can also sell things using the e-commerce that's built into all subscription plan levels, including the ability to accept donations. So even if you're not selling things or running a business, you can raise money for your nonprofit, your cash wedding registry, school fund drive, whatever. Squarespace is a really great place to do that. And it starts at just $8 a month. And that includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. And Squarespace is mobile ready. It's mobile ready for the visitors to your site who use your website with a mobile device like a smartphone. Looks beautiful because Squarespace automatically redesigns it on the fly specifically for a mobile app. And it's mobile ready for you as well because they have a Squarespace Metric app for iPhone and iPad that lets you check your site stats and do a number of things from your mobile device. So it's very, very powerful from a mobile device for everybody involved. Start a free 2-week trial with no credit card required and start building your website. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code TNT. That'll get you 10% off the price. and also show your support for Tech News Today. And we thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. And remember that a better web awaits, and it starts with your Squarespace website. Well, a startup called Now This Is News wants to do for news what Snapchat did for sexting, Snapchat, make it self-destructing. And to do that, they're in fact partnering with Snapchat. Ingrid in London writes for TechCrunch and joins us via Skype from London, right, Ingrid?
Actually, I'm in New York right now.
You are, but you're still far enough away to avoid the TechCrunch Disrupt conference.
No,
you're at it.
Disrupt.
Oh, that's the meeting you were at. You were at the. See, why don't you? Yeah, I asked several TechCrunch is really hot today. There's a bunch of stories, and I asked several TechCrunch folks to come on, and they're like, no, I'm at the conference. But you stepped up.
It's because I so often say I can't do it. I can't do it. So I thought, you know, it's our lunch break right now, so I can.
Okay, well, thank you for skipping lunch.
I'm in the dressing room, though. You can see.
Don't worry, we'll eat some Arby's for you here, so you don't have to worry about lunch. We'll take care of it for you. So. What kind of scheme is Now This Is News hatching here? It sounds like a kind of an unusual sort of proposal that they're coming out with here.
Well, we actually don't quite know. I mean, basically, I think Ken Lehrer, who's part of Lehrer Hippo, the VC that backs Now This News, and he's chairman of BuzzFeed, and he's a bit of a legend in the media world. He basically. Let slip on stage that they're working on a partnership with Snapchat. And he didn't say very much. He just, literally said, I mean, I think his exact words are something like, there's a deal to be done shortly, or deal's going to be done shortly. So he didn't really say anything. But then I started looking into what's been going on. I started digging around. And they've actually been doing a few little interesting things with them already. And so what I suspect is probably a formal arrangement of some kind, which makes perfect sense for Snapchat. And for Now This News. So, yeah. Do you want me to tell you about it?
Yes, I do. I was just going to ask, okay. what little things have been they've been working on?
So there's Snapchat, in one of their most recent updates, they launched a new feature called Stories, which is basically like the ability for users to create montages of different photos and things that they can string together. They'd been doing an experiment where people have been, you can use that to create a story. And they've posted a few exclusive ones onto Snapchat itself. So they're Now This News segments created using Snapchat technology, then posted on Snapchat. Then last week they did an update on the app, which involved video calling. And at the same time, they posted a little video from Now This News, which basically showed or said that they were going to be doing a little experiment on people basically submitting content to Now This News using that feature on Snapchat, so to pull in content. So they're using it in two ways. One way is to broadcast content. The other one is to bring in user-generated content, which fits in totally with the Now This News model, which is very socially based, very buzzy in that way.
What would user-generated content even look like? I'm having a hard time imagining what something someone would submit over Snapchat that's technically news would
yeah,
be like.
Well, I mean, this is good. I agree with you. I think that it's kind of points to the evolution of Snapchat. If it started out as like people kind of doing like fun sort of little notes to each other that they can doodle on, this can be like, I'm at this amazing concert and here it is, or I'm watching the marathon and somebody has just tried to, mess up the marathon with a bomb, there are many, many things. I mean, the whole idea of citizen reporting is pretty been used in a lot of different other scenarios, by more traditional organizations like CNN, BBC. They're constantly trying to get their users to, or their readers to submit stuff themselves using their smartphones and everything. So this makes sense in that regard, I think.
I think the sort of ad hoc gathering of video news is going to be a killer feature if, in fact, this is where they're going with this, simply because all it takes is one really high-level news event, and the video taken through Snapchat becomes, let's say there's a plane crash in the Hudson and somebody videotapes people on the wing and that sort of thing. That's all it takes for it to go super viral and have everybody talking about this feature, essentially, or this partnership.
Absolutely. It could be, You know, the thing about Nathis News is they've got some interesting partnerships already. You know, they work with NBC Universal has taken a stake in them, and they work with NBC. And Snapchat, again, has its position as this, you know, it's traditionally thought of as something for the younger smartphone user. And by younger, I don't mean 13. I mean like kind of teen to young, early 20s user. Something like this kind of synthesizes that, could be the making of either of them in a way of breaking through their traditional ideas. I mean, if you think about, as you say, some crazy, you know, national event, if somebody's on the ground and is able to take a picture of it and then decides to post that through their Snapchat up to Nathis News, they can then broadcast it somewhere else. And it becomes, as you say, completely viral. The whole point of Nathis News is to make things as viral as possible. So absolutely. It doesn't mean it will only stay on Snapchat.
A CNN update, for sure.
Exactly.
I would definitely swipe on a Now This Is News update over a CNN update, I think.
There you go. You're their target demographic.
And, of course, we reported early in the week that Snapchat has a resurgence among high school students and among people in general and users in general because of the new video features and some of the new features they rolled out recently. So Snapchat, you know, it's great to see an app like this just really continuing to be on a roll and becoming more and more popular all the time, and looks like they're going to be experimenting with some really powerful features. I think, you know, this is looking like, you know, something that could really replace a lot of the social and messaging apps that people are already using globally. So it's really kind of fascinating, and I'm very optimistic about Snapchat, especially because they're really embracing design. The design and the user interface that they rolled out this week is just really great. Actually, it's a really high quality user interface. Well, Ingrid London, I want to thank you for skipping lunch to join us here. And
I never skip lunch.
Okay.
I'll eat something.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us because it's always great to have you on. Appreciate your stories and your insights. So thanks again.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
All right. You can find Ingrid London at TechCrunch.com and also on Twitter at Ingrid London. And I'm going to spell that for you. It's IngridLunden. All right. Well, Google
that's
is
me.
That's you. All right. Well, Google is testing a complete redesign for bookmarks in Chrome. It's called Google Stars, and the new system is a total departure from the utilitarian bookmarking feature that currently exists. Emil Protolinsky is a technology journalist for The Next Web, and he joins us here to tell us about Google Stars. Welcome, Emil.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So glad to have you on, and I think this is your first time on Tech News Today, so
I double welcome you.
All right. Before we get into the details about Google Stars, can you tell us how we know what we know? I mean, for example, Google hasn't announced this. So how do we know that they're working on it?
Right. So I think it's important to emphasize that Google hasn't commented officially on any of this. So it's very possible that this will never launch. They're just testing it. And as we know, Google tests a myriad of new services all the time. So this can just never launch. The thought is that it'll launch at I/O, given that's it's just a month away. I think it's on the June 25th and 26th. But what's interesting, the way we did find out about it is a Google Plus user. I believe his name is Florian, and I'm going to butcher his last name, Kirsch.
It's as good as my guess. As you know, I think that's pretty close, at least.
He's been actually looking at this for a while, and I believe it was called Google Collections before they switched it to Stars. And as you can see there, it's being dog-fooded, which basically means that Google employees are testing it internally. Maybe a few other users are being invited, but we don't know anything for sure. He essentially has been messing around in Google Web Search, and he discovered some code about it a long while back and has been essentially updating us on Google Plus about his findings, the latest of which he actually managed to play with the actual tool and show off what it does have so far. But again, we don't know to what extent this will be available, if at all. What's really interesting is that we know that it's going to be tied into Chrome, but it also seems to be available, you know, as a website, as a cloud service, meaning it's very likely that if Google does launch this in some form, they will expand it to other platforms and have, you know, you'll be able to access it from Chrome through an extension or an app, but you'll also be able to navigate to it as on a web, directly. And they might even, you know, add on Android or however they want to push it based on what results they see.
So you think they might even be able to, get to it from Safari or Firefox?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, no. Yeah. From what we're seeing right now, it definitely looks like it'll be a website where you can just see everything. I mean, based on the stories that have come out, people are calling it, you know, a Pinterest, a delicious clone, and so on and so forth.
There's a social element to it, isn't there? And is this does this make it a kind of threat to something like Reddit?
I don't think it's a threat to anything right now, or in general, I don't think it's going to be a threat to any service. But the big advantage that Google does have here is that Google owns the browser, right? They have Chrome, and it's a very popular alternative to, let's say, Internet Explorer, Firefox, and Safari. So when they launch something like this, and assuming it's done well and users actually like it, they'll be able to use it directly from the browser. They won't, sure. You know, Facebook has been testing, for example, various things for saving items and something similar to this. But that, you know, that requires being on Facebook and using Facebook. This, from what we understand, will be something that you're browsing the web already, and then you can, you know, just favorite something here, favorite something there, sure. Add something here.
I feel like it really fits in with their Google Now feature, because that's something that basically mines from all the different apps that I use on Google to offer me recommendations of what show to watch tonight, to, you know, letting me know that my flight is changed. I feel like storing these bookmarks and then integrating them with their other apps would be really great for that service.
Right. So what's interesting again here is that Google's motto, or one of its goals, I mean, aside from the don't be evil, which they've pretty much butchered, is to organize the world's information. And what they're doing here is essentially letting you organize your world of information, right? So, which basically makes their job easier. If you've, you know, again, alluding to Pinterest, if you've pinned a bunch of, I don't know, football things, then they'll know you like football, and then they can serve you ads based on football. Again, we haven't seen anything in relation to advertising in this service, but presumably if they do launch this, if it does take off, that's where they're headed, right? They just want more and more information about you.
Right, exactly. And it appears to me that, and I follow Florian Kirsch on Google Plus, and it appears that the video that he posted, it's the same profile picture. It looks like it's using his identity from Google Plus, which makes a lot of sense. And it also makes me think that this might also be a feature of Google Plus. That could, in fact, be the website that you go to when you go to a website. Does that make sense, or is there any evidence against that possibility?
I mean, I can't say how if at all it'll tie into Google Plus, but I don't see why not.
Yeah.
Right now, Google Plus is very much in flux with all the executive shakeups, but I think Google right now, I would doubt they know what they're going to do. Yeah. So they're still testing it. They're going to release it. Assuming they do release it, it'll be very very limited, and they're going to see what they want to do with it. But I mean, we are talking about Google. If it launches, they can kill it in a couple months, right?
Yeah. Okay, Emil Protolinsky, I want to thank you for coming on. This is a really interesting story, and we'll keep our eyes out for it and cover this as it emerges or as it doesn't emerge, one way or the other.
Cool. Thank you for having me. All right, much appreciated.
Thanks again. You can find Emil Protolinsky on thenextweb.com. Make sure, again, you put the word the in there, thenextweb.com. And also on Twitter at epro, E-P-R-O. Well, an exclusive on Al Jazeera by investigative reporter Jason Leopold says that email messages obtained by Al Jazeera between the NSA and Google's top executives reveal what Leopold calls a, quote, cozy working relationship. Google and other technology companies denied working closely with the NSA in the wake of the Edward Snowden revelations about mass surveillance when everybody involved was running for the hills to avoid blame. Now, Alyssa, this story, I read it carefully. And he claims that these emails show a cozy relationship, but I don't see a cozy relationship at all. It seems to be a straightforward series of emails where the National Security Agency Director, General Keith Alexander, invited Sergey Brin and Eric Schmidt to a series of meetings about security where the tech company executives would be briefed about new security threats that the NSA has uncovered. That doesn't sound to me like a cozy relationship. That just sounds to me like, you know, informing technology companies about a security threat.
I would agree, but I also think that anytime these execs seem to be cooperating or, you know, going locations with other NSA officers, I think that really freaks out the internet, just because you will, and they've all sort of positioned themselves, especially someone like Mark Zuckerberg, who, you know, way back wrote that sort of screed against the NSA and that said he was disappointed in the United States by their surveillance tactics. They really want to position themselves as foes of the NSA, or like enemies of the NSA. And I think that just by the sheer fact that they were communicating in a what seems like a non-conflicting way really scares people. And so that almost registers as cozy, because we all want to be sort of protesting the NSA and refusing to, you know, comply. And here these guys are trying to, you know, have a conversation.
Yeah. After bed. Well, I mean, I think you very accurately depicted the public mood and the sort of the political or, you know, PR ramifications of interaction with the NSA. But if the NSA comes to you and you're Google and they say, we know some really horrible security problems out there that we want to tell you about, the alternative to hearing it about that is to say, no, we don't want to know. We don't want to know about these security threats that are out there. We're just going to go ahead and let them affect our users, and we'll remain ignorant so that we can say that we are not involved. And by the way, it's worth pointing out that there may be an element of avoiding contact as well, because neither Sergey Brin nor Eric Schmidt went to most of these meetings. It's unknown whether they sent other Google representatives, but I would guess that they did. And these meetings were essentially classified threat briefings that lasted 4 hours. And they happened at the San Jose airport at an undisclosed, I don't know,
so
smoking
mysterious
area or something. Yeah, yeah. I've been to the San Jose airport. There isn't a lot of space there to have secret meetings and so on. But, you know,
yeah.
I do think that this story was overblown. And I think that, you know, until we hear from Google, and I'm sure they'll come out and say, look, we were just meeting with these guys. And that sounds pretty straightforward. We don't want the NSA using Google services for mass surveillance. We do want the NSA to inform, or anybody who has the information, to inform technology companies about threats so they can protect users. We do want that. Even the NSA, as tarnished as their reputation is right now, they have capabilities that nobody else in the world has. And if that's going to help users, then I'm all for it. Well.
Right. And I think that it's really interesting, because there was that news story back when the Heartbleed bug came out that said, you know, the NSA knew about Heartbleed and didn't tell anyone. And so we can't necessarily, though that the NSA later denied it, we can't necessarily say, oh, tech companies don't communicate with the NSA at all, because they very well could have found something really important that they need to share about our security on the internet. And by ignoring them, we just, all the tech companies basically ignore their intelligence. Yeah. I mean, and they have quite a bit of that, I've heard.
getting information from the NSA is difficult to do, because they are a secret, clandestine organization that keeps secrets very well. Getting information to the NSA is very easy. Just pick up the phone.
Yes.
Start talking. They're listening. Oh, well, Google Glass is about to grow the ability to send money with a voice command, according to a story on TechCrunch. Again, TechCrunch. They had a great day today. Integration with Google Wallet will enable users to say, send money. That's the command, followed by the name of the recipient, and off it goes. You know, the funny thing about this story, Alyssa, is that it's not like the Moto X, where it memorizes your specific voice and only responds to your voice. With Google Glass, anybody can run up. Somebody can come right up to your face and say, you know, send money to me.
I know, that seems like my new favorite prank. I just imagine there's going to be a trend piece in the New York Times soon about people running up to people with Google Glass on the street. Instead of harassing them, they'll say, send this much money.
Yeah, exactly.
And that could be, I hope that there are going to be specific security features that prevent that from happening. But it is so fascinating. Imagine that could be the new stick-up, like, you know, pointing or like, you know, using a weapon to threaten someone and having them say, send money.
At the very least, it should be a, you know, plot in a comedy or something like that, because that would be hilarious.
Yes. Yeah. I envision an SNL skit on this almost.
It's inevitable.
Within the next month.
That's right. Well, we've got some updates on the fitness app Moves and what Facebook is doing with it. You might not like it if you're a Moves user. But first, I want to tell you about RingCentral. RingCentral is the cloud-based phone system that we use here at Twit. Now, why do we use this? The reason is that it's super inexpensive, easy to use, easy to maintain. There really isn't any maintenance. And it gives us all the capabilities that we want and could ever want from a phone system. For example, it has something called the auto receptionist that greets callers. It announces employees and department extensions. All kinds of things. You can send fax, receive faxes, and so on. It's just an all-purpose phone system. And most importantly, it's not a big PBX. PBX systems are expensive, bloated, clunky, hard to maintain, and very expensive to maintain. And, of course, RingCentral is the opposite of all of that. But best of all, RingCentral now has a new feature called Meetings. So we can host face-to-face meetings in high def, share desktop or documents with anyone, anytime, anyone, anywhere, anytime on any device. And Meetings makes RingCentral the single best business solution on the market today. RingCentral offers all-inclusive pricing under $25 a month per user, and you can start right now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And they have a special offer for our listeners. When you buy one desk phone, you get a second phone free up to 20 phones. So call this number designated for Tech News Today listeners, 800-543-9980. That's 800-543-9980. Or you can just go to ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. Do yourself a favor and try RingCentral. Well, we reported on April 24th that Facebook bought the fitness app Moves. The app tracks your location and the amount of time you spend at each place, inviting you to fill in the details about where you are and what you're doing at all times of the day. Well, at the time of the acquisition, Facebook promised Moves users that, quote, the Moves experience will continue to operate as a standalone app, and there are no plans to change that or commingle data with Facebook. Well, today we learned that Facebook has changed its privacy policy to allow Moves to share user data with Facebook and other companies and apps owned by Facebook. Users were not notified of the change. Now, Alyssa, this is not evidence that Facebook has or plans to share the data from Moves with other Facebook apps, but they changed their privacy policy, so now they are getting everybody who agrees to this privacy policy that it's okay for them to do this. And I wrote a piece recently about Facebook's new model, which is that instead of aggregating everybody in one place, which is the old model, and in that one place, Facebook.com, you harvest user data, and in that one place, you display ads. Facebook's new model is to have lots and lots of apps. They now have probably close to 10 mobile apps, and they harvest data from most or all of those apps, and then they have a new ad network that they rolled out last week at F8 that enables them to display ads that reflect the user data that they've harvested from the other apps. So it's harvest information everywhere, display ads everywhere, and it's not about Facebook.com anymore. And this is a perfect example of that strategy where they want to harvest the data from Moves because it's killer data. It's really, really high-quality location data. And then use that for contextual advertising everywhere else. Do you think this is kind of an underhanded move, though, for them to not inform users?
Yeah, I mean, so to speak to your point, I think that in a New York Times interview, Mark Zuckerberg described all of that as unbundling the big blue app. And that's, you know, a really wholesome description of what's going on. But at the same time, they are very notorious for sort of doing something and then asking for forgiveness, like never really notifying people when privacy settings are changing or, you know, that you can now be looked up according to your favorite TV shows and Facebook graph search or something like that. And those were all instances where they made these announcements as if they were great things, but really ignored any sort of security or privacy concerns by people. And I think that it's even more dangerous when it comes to an app like Moves. You know, perhaps this is just them dipping their toe in the water and seeing, okay, well, what's the response here? They're almost testing our limits. And I think as people forget about it, because new news comes about, they're able to sort of sneak under the radar and really take advantage of their general and giant user base's apathy or cluelessness.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's a little of both, I think, in a lot of cases. And I know that all hell broke loose when Google did something similar. They changed their privacy policies of most of their public-facing offerings so that data could be shared in exactly this way. And it was really a big PR nightmare for Google because everybody got paranoid and started freaking out. And then later on, the integrations with YouTube and so on with Google Plus caused them even more headache. So it'll be interesting to see if Facebook has a similar reaction. But I'm with you on this. I think the resulting outcry will be almost zero, and people will continue to allow their user data to be harvested and for contextual advertising. And ultimately, I don't contextual advertising doesn't really bug me that much anyway. I'd rather have customized, targeted advertising for things I'm actually interested in than things that, weight loss pills and all these other things I'm not interested in. It remains to be seen if they can actually do it skillfully. That's my biggest beef with Facebook, especially, and their contextual advertising. Sometimes they don't even know what language I speak. I see ads in foreign languages. And so they're really bad at it. Yeah. And so we'll see where this goes. But it's an interesting development because they specifically said they wouldn't do it. And then once they did it, they didn't tell anyone. So kind of a shady move, in my opinion. Well,
yeah, they're the shady ex-boyfriend.
Yeah, yes, they are. Like yes, they are. They're the world's shady ex-boyfriend. That's a good description of Facebook. Well, in other news, Google tried to build, you're not going to believe this, they tried to build a jetpack. Yeah, they really did. We learned the news from comments made by Google X Labs moonshot chief Astro Teller. Yes, his name is Astro Teller. At the TechCrunch Disrupt conference today. Sadly, the project failed and Google shut it down. Google also tried and failed to build hoverboards and space elevators. Teller said that Google X shuts down more than 100 projects a year. And the reason for this one being shut down, apparently, Alyssa, is that it was expensive and dangerous and ultimately didn't really benefit mankind. It was just really neato. And
I feel like a lot of Google X projects are like that. I mean, I think that they're just like having a great time over there. And because Google is really into dreaming big, maybe some projects go under the radar for a little bit that are just like, geeky dreams that they want to live out almost. I mean, I just got that sense from this story that they were like, wouldn't it be awesome if like our childhood dreams came true? And I think that, ultimately they were like, well, this has no commercial potential whatsoever. Like, we need to nip this in the bud. But that was fun.
Well, I know this. If I were a gazillionaire, I would build a jetpack too. I would have a robot army. I would have space balloons. I would do it all. Why not? And it's all for the benefit of mankind. That's the important thing. Well, Alyssa, I want to thank you for coming on Tech News today and being our guest co-anchor today.
Yeah, I was really happy to be here.
So where can people find your work?
At yahootech.com, yahootech.com, or you can find me on Twitter.
Wonderful. They can find you under your name, Alyssa Bresnak.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Yes,
well, thanks
again.
Yeah, it's a long one. But you can do it. You can type that in.
I have faith in people.
That's right.
Yes.
Well, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks so much.
All right. Well, tomorrow's guest co-anchor is Alexis Madrigal, who writes for The Atlantic. So make sure you tune in tomorrow. And you can also subscribe to Tech News Today at twit.tv/TNT. And we want you to join our Google Plus community and also circle our page by searching for Tech News Today on Google Plus. And we want to hear from you as well. Comment on Twitter or Google Plus using the hashtag Tech News Today. Send us an email at tnt@twit.tv or leave us a voicemail by calling 260-TNT-SHOW. Tell us what's on your mind. Also, don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every weeknight. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.